top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 355 of the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a classic horror story. First off, just want to note that you just can't overestimate just how long a shadow the Texas Chainsaw Massacre has cast for any type of subsequent exploitation type film. I mean, the influence of that film just percolates to this very day. And it runs through the work of everything from the Wrong Turn series to the entire of Rob Zombie, who seems like he almost is incapable of steering clear from such a conceit. But what's interesting is this story, despite being Italian and a modern day 2021 release, it's currently on Netflix, a classic horror story, has some of these similar tropes as well. So just, if anything, it just made me appreciate right off the bat, and I know I'm showing my cards here, but what a singular and grainy, gritty effort the 1974 TCM was. I mean, you don't forget your first, right? That's the saying. That is really the first hardcore horror film I ever saw, and it was at a sleepover with a bunch of my buddies in North Toronto. We were probably 12 years old. And it was my friend Ari's house, and we had five or six people, and of course got the snacks and then sat down. And based on a true story, just obviously snookered us and had us completely captivated. And then with a lot of false bravado toward the end of that wasn't so bad, obviously, because the work was so subtle, and we were anticipating that the whirring chainsaws would be rendered more visibly than they infamously were not, I guess you could say. A classic horror story is a decamping of a setting in what you'd typically expect from a exploitation type film. It's filmed actually in southern Italy. And which, I mean, there are parts of it that you could, that could be analogous to the U.S. South as well, and some of these off-the-beaten-path type places, because in Italy there's something called the Mezzogiorno. Literally it means midday, but it refers to the geography that is basically south of Rome. Now, the Italian economy is heavily stratified and heavily disproportionately influenced by the north. The north is the economic driver, and the south remains a sort of a misbegotten, forgotten laggard in many respects. And every country has that. In Canada, it's the east coast typically, which had to transition from a fishing economy. In the U.S. South, until very recently, it's been very, very much of a laggard. So places like Arkansas and Alabama, until I guess they started to see a slight uptick in manufacturing. But these were always places where the people were less healthy, the economic disparities were much more pronounced. And in the case of Italy, not coincidentally, this is the home of the mafia, or at least the strongest mafia currently in operation, to which a classic horror story alludes, and it's 'Ndrangheta, which is an extraordinarily powerful multi-billion dollar criminal syndicate that has its roots in Calabria, and is giving the likes of La Cosa Nostra and the other players in the mafia space reason to be very scared, because they operate in a way that is, very, very brutal. And they will disappear bodies into the mountains. Into this part of Italy is very mountainous. They use a lot of really innovative ways to get their drugs, predominantly, I believe, heroin and cocaine, and a major distributor throughout Europe, and have famously, I believe, connected with Colombians, and even used submarines to distribute it. So the 'Ndrangheta are not ones to be messed with. They have a strong presence, allegedly, in the Greater Toronto Area as well, and they maintain a level of secrecy and furtiveness through extraordinarily tight family ties, which makes the gang so difficult to infiltrate, because they're cousins and they're real tight-knit families, and they're not as liable to snitch on one another as like the modern-day exemplars in the Five Families in New York, and this John Gotti and all his type of crew, and the Sopranos, that kind of New Jersey mafia and whatnot. So when you have a setting like this, you have the backdrop of mafia, but it also, there's text and subtext, and there's a one of the foundation myths of the mafia itself is actually incorporated into one of the ritualistic doings by this one group. You could say that a classic horror story, it bores a lot of the trappings that are common to the folk horror genre. And you can see this a lot in recent efforts like The Ritual, which is a terrific 2017 British movie about a bunch of friends who go out hiking and in Scandinavia and come upon what have become tropes ever since The Wicker Man. But lots of these tropes have come to the fore when you're talking folk horror, even in the likes of Midsommar, but less so in that one. But you have your sort of Jägermeister type logo masks, where you have the goat's horns and that kind of pagan rituals. You have bonfires, you've got effigies made out of straw typically, and you've got ways that you tip off your protagonist that they're somewhere they shouldn't be, and this is a par for the course. This is actually something Wrong Turn did quite a bit, and rituals, actually, speaking of rituals, rituals with a capital R, aka the Canadian Deliverance with Hal Holbrook, and really made use of these kinds of tropes as well. So a little bit, let's get into a little bit of the plot discussion for a classic horror story. What you have is a rideshare program, and this guy Fabrizio, who's the driver, and instead of your typical like Uber type vehicle where it's some subcompact or whatever it is, it's actually a kind of a camper van RV. So it's a little bit odd when you're watching it as a North American, unless you have some sort of familiarity with the Italian geography, because unlike other parts in Europe, this is not an area that's very accessible. Like there's lots of highways, but if you were just an average commuter, you can't exactly just hop on a train and get down there to Reggio Calabria and all that. It'll take a while because they don't have the kind of high-speed bullet trains and all the technology that you see in France and Germany, or the leaders in the space would be Japan with their like 350 kilometer an hour like crazy ass trains that just fly over somewhere in just a complete nanosecond seemingly. So you're asked to accept this kind of thing, but when, from what I've been told, because my dealings in the Mezzogiorno are not too familial, despite my family coming from Calabria itself, I've only made it down to Napoli, which, speaking of mafia strongholds, that's another one. But I've never been further than Capri and Napoli and the Gulf of Naples, and that's actually the soccer team I support. But yeah, there's it's not the most accessible, and if you're gonna do a Hicksploitation, and if you're gonna do this kind of pagan folk horror, then Calabria would probably be the place to do it, and where you can get away with it, because if people are familiar with travel news and travel vlogging and whatnot, you can see that there's been some a lot of media coverage about being able to buy properties like run down, totally decimated and thoroughly almost abandoned looking sort of farmhouse structures, the type of place that my dad and his family would have grown up in before they came to Canada. But there's a lot of run down properties, and famously you'll see articles appearing from time to time about, oh, you can get a piece of property for a dollar in this Calabrese town. Fair enough, but then you could be met with God knows what kind of asbestos and mold and things falling apart on you. So, well, a nice pastoral countryside and mountains. I mean, this is a beautiful region of the country, and not to mention fantastic beaches. And that sounds like it would be an allure, but, you know, caveat emptor and buyer beware. And really, like, you're not getting that much of a deal. It's just basically an excuse to try and build up the population base of dying rural communities, something that's common on these shores as well, not just in Italy. So you have this group of people who are taking this camper van ride-sharing, like Uber service, and they consist of a Brit from Bristol, who's got a girlfriend from Ukraine. There's this doctor who seems like a kind of a sullen figure with a goatee. And there's Elisa, who's a young woman who it turns out is going to visit her family, but I think also go for an abortion. So she's in the throes of morning sickness and dealing with that. Now the Brit has been guzzling beers along for the ride, and he grabs the wheel and sort of strong arms the kind of meek Fabrizio character and convinces him to drive for a little bit down the road, even though Fabrizio protests that, this is actually his family's vehicle and he doesn't own it and whatnot. But he's a bit of a kind of an incel looking guy, one of these sort of fat guys who's not exactly Casanova with the ladies, speaking of famous Italians. But he relents and lets the Brit take over driving duties, and they're weaving through this mountainous trek, and it seems very harrowing road. And one of them grabs the wheel to steer away from what looks like I guess it's like some sort of rabbit's head, or it could be like a corpse of something on the road, and they steer clear. And in order to take evasive actions, it reminds me of that joke with the lawyer and the skid mark around the skunk and not the lawyer kind of thing. But, they ram themselves into a tree and figure out that they're stuck in the middle of nowhere. And when it comes to, i loro telefoni non funzionare, their phones are not working. So it's kind of, every film now, you got to have a nod to technology failing you, despite the fact that despite how remote you are, generally speaking, you're going to get some sort of signal. So they sort of dispense with that, and I guess you got to do it now. Every film's got to do it. Now, what's interesting, the situation this group of people finds themselves in is that when they, wake up, because they, I think what happens is they've slept a while after their accident, or they don't come to right away, and they find themselves actually miles from the roadside. So it adds a bit of a supernatural element, a classic horror story does, insofar as that their vehicle is no longer, like, let's say, 10 feet off the beaten path, off the road, after ramming into the tree, but completely in the middle of some clearing. And there's this three-cornered hut that's strangely illuminated, and obviously the dwelling place, or maybe not so obviously, of someone who's a bit of a nefarious creeper. And that's where things progress, where some of the touchstones of the folk horror genre are things that the crew starts to encounter. And yes, you get this scene where they come across three pig's heads, and then they have a monument to... It says they're a tribute to Signori Osso Mastroso Carcagnoso. And if you're familiar with mafia lore, these are some of, allegedly, and this is very apocryphal, they don't exactly know how mafia really got its start, but there's these three brothers, I think, from Spain who were exiled and then started to form this criminal underclass. And so if you see the names Osso Mastroso Carcagnoso, then that'll be sort of a tip-off for you. And this is sort of amplified and reinforced by Fabrizio's joking about the mafia throughout the movie, in one case actually telling quite a funny joke about Calabria and him him being Calabrian and his mafia ties obviously played for extra laughs because the guy's a complete gomer. But how these characters sort of interact with one another and how they come to deal with their circumstances is the entire thrust of a classic horror story. It's just funny, however, though, and we're going to segue now into things I've learned, but a classic horror story, when I think about that, I think of like maybe Black Christmas and people who are sort of stalked in a house. I don't really think of folk horror as a classic horror story. And the title, A Classic Horror Story, I think more alludes to either the Black Christmas style, a stalk and slash type film, or maybe more of a supernatural type effort, like something told around a campfire, or potentially, let's say, something that's maybe influenced by urban legend, like The Burning, or potentially maybe the George C. Scott star, or The Changeling, something that's more of a straight ahead, something that you could tell around the campfire. So it's strange that this is given that title. And this is another film that I've discussed here that actually has a two-headed monster as the director team. But I think they actually fulfill their vision in a pretty seamless and streamlined way. And it's directed by Roberto De Feo and Paolo Stripoli. And I'm not entirely familiar with their work. They also did the screenplay, so they're heavily involved in that as well. And so another thing I learned, really, that is that this one has some really, really incredible musical accompaniment. I mean, the music's by Massimiliano Micheli, and it is like really on point. It makes incredible use of cellos and string sections. It's incredibly unnerving. And really, really, like, the mix is right to the forefront, and it will make your heart race in a way that I don't know if the entire film is able to do it throughout, but there's a few scenes that actually are very, very impactful that really, really stand out. And not the least of which is when one of their members of their ranks is kidnapped and forced to endure this ocular trauma kind of thing, because apparently foundational myth of this pagan cult involves the eyes, the ears, and the tongue, and sort of taking out the eyes, taking out the tongue, taking out the ears, which is almost like a, you know, snitches get stitches, you know, an omerta mafia thing. So I mean, you don't have to be Columbo to figure out that there's a hidden mafia, and not even too well hidden, mafia connotations and mafia references. And to the extent, I'm not sure it really pans out, it has a few things that would tip you off about that. Now, lest you think this is a folk horror and your protagonists are going to meet their makers in a slow, protracted burn a la The Ritual or Midsommar, there is a massive twist at the end that I don't think I can really spoil. All I can say is that not something that I think was particularly well handled, even though I can really laud this film for taking that kind of artistic ambition, for going there with it, was not on board and not sold. But credit where credit is due. If you're gonna go for it like this, you might as well swing for the fences, and you might as well go for the gusto and just say, hell, let's just do it and let's see what the hell happens. Because you can only applaud ambition when someone's going to just, you know, not attempting to reinvent the wheel and just going down the same garden path. It can get kind of annoying, frankly. And so it's nice to see something. Yeah, I liken it almost to a Dr. Sleep in a way. There's a movie with loads of ambition that doesn't come together, but you almost can't fault it. Another thing I learned is that Matilda Lutz as Elisa is really good, and Peppino Mazzotta is really great as Ricardo. And he's an Italian actor, and he's from Calabria as well, and he plays the doctor, and he cuts just a really great figure. Now, when it comes to, I guess, the aforementioned ocular trauma and a sort of see no evil, hear no evil kind of thing, obviously Italian horror, at least when it's seen through the lens of Lucio Fulci, has made it his business to make ocular trauma like his calling card in a way. And you can see that with the glass shard in Zombie, or with the bleeding eyes in, who is it, the Katrina McCall character in The Beyond, I want to say that. But Lucio Fulci always has something really impactful when it comes to the eyes. And although they pulled their punches somewhat in A Classic Horror Story, when this eye scene comes around, it is just a masterclass in horror the way they depict it. And less is more, getting back to Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And you got to really give credit where credit's due here, because that's really, really well done. Will Merrick plays Mark. He's the Brit. And he's on this show called Skins, which I have not seen. This is a series that's won BAFTA awards, and maybe something I should check out, because I'm a real Anglophile and a real fan of British television. I made no bones about People Who Just Do Nothing, one of my favorite shows of all time, the original Office for sure. And I've been in the lockdowns catching up on 8 out of 10 Cats, a silly variety show that's hosted by one of my favorite comics named Jimmy Carr. So I'm always on board with British stuff, so maybe I'll check that out. But another thing I've learned is that toward the end, there's this strange coda where you have a video chat forum discussion, and one of the characters mentioned something about Italians not being able to make really good horror. And I thought, like, I hope this is like some sort of in-joke that went over my head, because, I mean, if you were to make a Mount Rushmore of horror, you would have surely Dario Argento and Lucio Fulci on there, and people would argue maybe Mario Bava as well, but for sure you would have Argento. I think he's, as a stylistic master, I think you would probably place him at the forefront. I'm rewatching Stendhal Syndrome. I was going to actually podcast that, informed by my recent visit to the Art Gallery of Ontario, but I wasn't quite in the mood for it, but it doesn't matter. Like, Argento is in, maybe a class by himself, but if you're going to have a Mount Rushmore of horror, you have your Argentos, Carpenters, Cronenbergs, and Romeros right in the mix right there. I mean, you absolutely have to. Anyway, I digress. There's a little bit of a faltering there toward the end, and I'm not sure that I really was on board with this twist, but I liked certain aspects that really stood out, like the sort of surrealistic tree stand, where you sort of see a monoculture of trees that adds to a real strange and disequilibrium setting. Because if you were just to shoot something in the woods with your standard, you know, oaks and maples and whatnot, it would just be, it wouldn't be as otherworldly as this. So they have a few really quite impactful and really well done scenes right off the bat. And again, this is a Netflix production. And so, or at least it was distributed by Netflix, and as is par for the course, you have these swooping, sweeping aerial shots with maybe drone footage, and you get a real good sense, once again, and fine if you're going to do this, because that's the type of film it is, but it speaks to the remoteness of the region, and how this is a different world from the civilized one. When it comes to, I guess, more of a folklorish modern effort, I've really been championing the Turkish horror called Baskin, which I think really goes for the jugular a lot more than this one, and just has a really strange, unnerving, and really gory climax that I think makes it stand alone in this kind of realm. And so, yeah, again, similar to Rituals with a little bit of an Italian twist, similar to The Ritual, and with a few nods to, I guess, Wrong Turn. You can't really escape, pardon the pun, being sort of lumped in with all other genre stalwarts in the exploitation and the folk horror realm. And I like folk horror, you know, even Midsommar, it had a lot of detractors, but I thought it was kind of unique. And I thought it had its moments here and there. And I'm not going to be one to gush all over it, but I mean, if it were given the choice of that and the constant stream of Ouija-type films and whatnot, I know where I'm going to cast my lot. So, I mean, you know, DeFeo and Stripoli, I think, acquitted themselves quite nicely behind the camera. And so this one's from July 2021, so it's hot off the presses. You can see it on Netflix right now. And worth checking out. I'm going to give it like a hesitant kind of rate. Like if you were to judge solely based on ambition, then you give it a 5, but execution maybe a 2, and maybe you split the difference, maybe you give it a 3.25. There's something about venturing down your own path, and then there's something about being just non-conformist, but not really being able to be non-conformist without having something to conform against. And when you have maybe like a writer like Ralph Waldo Emerson will say he derived his strength from nonconformity. And to an extent, there's a lot of high nonconformist bent and streak to this one. But I don't know if just by having some massive twist that upends what you're accustomed to seeing in the space really renders it all that believable. So I am not entirely sold. I don't know if this would maybe warrant another watching, but I'm not sure if it's good enough to really do that. Again, the performance is really solid. Post-credits scene, I take extreme umbrage with, but hopefully it's an inside joke. As the Italian horror space, it spawned its own subgenre of cannibal movies. It's also quite an amazing and consistently gripping subgenre of horror that Eli Roth really tried to revive in the Green Inferno. Sounds like a superhero movie. It's this really terrible title, but he really conjures up, and it's one of the few Eli Roth movies I actually like, but he actually did, I think, a pretty good job celebrating that Misbegotten trashy genre. And if you hadn't had a chance to check that out, you know, Ruggiero Deodato is one of the principals who really led the charge in that, but there's other offerings as well that you can dive into, whether it's the Cannibal Ferox or one of the other imitators. And anyway, yeah, let's give this one a solid 3. It's well shot, has just dynamite soundtrack, and viewers are maybe not accustomed to seeing a hexploitation from Italy. Italy has a perception that it's an incredibly stylish, sophisticated, urbanized place, but then you still have to realize that there's still parts of it that really aren't. So I could say that because that's where my family's from, but this is not the most sophisticated part of the country, shall we say. Anyway, hope you're enjoying the podcast. Continue to listen, continue to enjoy all the horror and action films that you can avail yourselves of on different streaming services. Tubi, I find a particularly good one, although I'm a Amazon and a Netflix subscriber as well. And I shall talk to you soon, and take care. Thank you.